I'm here to be a catalyst for awe. You are a character in your life. So what kind of story are you telling? Is it any good? Or is it kind of boring? Let's put it to the test. This is Character Test with Joe Bunting. Welcome to Character Test, my podcast about the characters we love and hate in the books we read, the films we watch, and the lives we lead. My name is Joe Bunting, and I'm a best-selling author and the founder of The Right Practice.
And I'm Alice Sudlow. I'm the editor-in-chief of The Right Practice and the StoryGrid certified editor.
So today, as always, we're going to start by putting a character to the test. Alice and I look at a character in a book we're reading or film we're watching and ask, is this actually a good character? And also, what can we learn from this character? What character are we talking about today, Alice?
We're talking about Mallory Hayes from Bird Box, the novel by Josh Malerman, which was also turned into a film starring Sandra Bullock.
After that, we're mixing it up a little bit this week. This is our 11th episode, which is amazing. And recently, I gave a talk to a conference here in Atlanta called ATL Ideas, and I was thinking about the vision behind why I started this podcast and the vision behind all my work. So in place of an interview this week, I'm going to share the audio of that talk. Huge thank you to Plywood People, the host of this conference, who recorded the talk and gave me permission to share it with you. In the talk, I share my core message, the story that I've been trying to tell in all my work since I was a kid. I talk about how I discovered that core message, how you can discover yours, and also the tension between that message and the work that we have to do to get that message out into the world. If you've ever thought, there has to be more to my work than just making money or the busyness that comes with the requirements of our jobs, this message is for you. The last part of our show is our character study, where we ask, what can we learn in our own lives as we try to live a better story? Thanks for listening to the Character Test Show. We have a free prize for everyone who listens to this episode. I'm not going to tell you what it is, though, so you'll have to find out for yourself. You can get it at charactertestshow.com/episode11. Again, go to charactertestshow.com/episode11 to get a free prize related to this episode. All right, Alice, it's time for the character test portion of the show. Today, we're examining Mallory Hayes from the novel and now film Bird Box. For those who aren't familiar with the story, can you give a quick spoiler-free summary, Alice?
So here's how it works. There are creatures in the world that will cause a person to go crazy if you see them. No one knows how or why the creatures are here, but when people see them, they lose their minds and they hurt and kill themselves and other people. To protect themselves, any survivors have hidden themselves away, boarding up windows and wearing blindfolds anytime they have to go outside. The main character, Mallory, has two small children, and she's trying to row blindfolded down a river to a safe house where they'll be protected from the creatures. At the same time, the book also shows us what happened 4 years before when Mallory arrived at her first safe house soon after the creatures were discovered as everyone was adjusting to this post-apocalyptic world. I'm going to do my best to avoid spoilers with this one, but I might slip and give a few and you might kind of maybe get the vibe of the end of the story, even if I don't necessarily say some of the big events. I'm also talking specifically about the book. I haven't seen the movie, so I'm focusing solely on the book with this discussion.
Cool. Sounds great. So why did you choose this character to test, Alice?
I actually chose her on the suggestion of a friend who reads and writes a lot of horror, and I think that she'll be an interesting character to talk about. The friend wanted to discuss the book, and I think that's a sign that it is a book that promotes discussion.
All right, well, let's put Mallory to the test using our four criteria for what makes an interesting character, starting with her goal. Does Mallory have a goal, and what is that goal?
So the fundamental goal for Mallory in this story, and I think probably the fundamental goal for a lot of horror, is protection, is safety, is to protect her children and herself. What that looks like for her in the present of the story present, is to get to this safe house down the river. What it looks like in the story past is to be in this fortress kind of house and make sure that everyone in the house is safe within that house and that they make wise decisions about how to continue to maintain that safety.
So that's her goal. Does Mallory have to overcome challenges to accomplish that goal?
She definitely does. First off, the big thing is there is limited information about the creatures. No one knows how or why everyone is going crazy because they're looking at them. No one even knows what the creatures look like, because if you have seen them, then you are lost to the world. And they also try a few different avenues to learn more information about the creatures, and those avenues typically end poorly, so they don't really gain a lot of information. It's also a group of stir-crazy people in a small house. They live in this house for almost a year, I think, in the story past, and to have, what, 5 or 6 people living together in this house, in this post-apocalyptic world where they cannot go outside without putting themselves in danger, that is a tight group of people. They also have limited food and resources, so they have to make sure they're rationing well. And in the story present, she has to leave this house. She has to leave this place of safety, and she has to put herself at risk to go down this river and take a journey of over 20 miles blindfolded without being able to see the risks that she's putting herself and her children in.
I definitely would have a lot of challenges if I lived in a small house with 6 other people. That sounds very difficult.
Yes, yes. They don't always agree on things, and that becomes an issue.
So good characters make decisions. Does Mallory make decisions, and can you point to one of them?
So she does make decisions. This is a character who makes decisions, and that's important. She makes the decision at the beginning of the book to leave her house where she's alone and go to this safe house that she heard about, I think, in an ad, and that someone had mentioned that they were gathering people, you could come here and be safe. And that is a big decision, to leave the house that she's in and have to travel through this town to get to the safe house. But my challenge with this story is that decision, to me, most of the decisions that she makes throughout the rest of the book are kind of on the same level. They have about the same stakes. They're about the same question a lot of times. There are a couple more times when she has to decide whether or not to stay or leave, which is the same decision. And we already know that she's capable of making that decision because she made it at the very beginning of the book. I wanted to see her make different kinds of decisions, take different kinds of risks. And there are some more interpersonal decisions that she makes within the house when she has to decide whether or not to take leadership, whether or not to trust someone in the house, and whether or not her gut feelings about people in the house or about problems that they're facing, whether she needs to take leadership and act on those and change what other people are doing because of her feelings. So she has some other kinds of decisions, but for the most part, she plays that same one note of decision making. And I think that's my main challenge with her as a character, is she also plays one note of terror the entire time. She's terrified when she leaves the house the first time, and she's also terrified when she leaves the house the second time, and she's terrified when she leaves the house the third time. And that level of terror, there's not really a fluctuation in that level of terror. And we don't really see even an increased sense of competency. I don't see ways in which she has grown and changed and found new or different or more intelligent or experienced ways to interact with this world. She plays that one note of terror the whole story. And there's a sense to which the creatures make you crazy. But by the end of the book, I started wondering if she's at this extremely high level of terror, just constantly, for almost 5 years, wouldn't that also put her at risk of losing her mind, of losing herself? And the book doesn't really create a space to explore that. It almost is like she is safest when she is on the brink of flipping out at any tiny noise.
So what I'm hearing is that you were a little bit bored when you were reading this book. Is that true?
Honestly, yes. I mean, there were definitely places where I was really curious what was going to happen next. But anytime that it flipped back to the story present, to this journey down the river, I was kind of bored because there are some challenges that she comes up against. But also, this might be a spoiler, she's successful against them all. Mm-hmm. Like, she encounters one problem and they deal with the problem for a bit, and then they keep floating down the river and the problem is passed. Like, there's not a sense of her having to grow and change, of her having to encounter new things. So there was a sense of boredom.
So Is Mallory empathizable?
I think to a degree, yes. I think that there are a lot of pressures on her. I mean, it's a terrifying world. And one thing I didn't talk about a whole lot is that in the story past, she's pregnant. And then in the story present, it's 4 years after the birth of her child and of someone else's child. And so she has these two children that she's been caring for 4 years, and she's afraid for these children. And so I think that that is something that we can empathize with. But I think that the degree of her constant terror, at some points, I found it hard to empathize with.
Yeah.
At some points, I felt like I wanted to see her being able to overcome that terror in certain situations, in certain ways, where, especially once I had more information, I knew that she had faced a challenge like this before and had navigated it or learned how to navigate it, either successfully or learned from her failures. And so I knew that there was a competency there that she maybe wasn't leaning into. And I found that disappointing, a little less relatable to see her not being able to actualize on that.
So that's interesting. I mean, I think that's an interesting point, that we actually can empathize with people who change, who grow, who learn from their mistakes and from their successes. But it's harder to empathize with people who are kind of stuck in the same spot and the same emotions. It takes more work to empathize with people in those places. And the same is true for characters in those places.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't want to write her off necessarily. I'm going to kind of flow into some things that we could learn from her. But one thing I was thinking about as I was reflecting on whether or not she's a good character is that this sense that she's kind of constantly focusing on this one negative emotion is kind of boring. Mm. And I find that tough to say, because the reality is that a lot of times we do have long ongoing major struggles in our lives that we think about and we talk about and we wrestle with and struggle with for years. Like, the concept of there being a very serious problem for a very long time, that's real. But I felt like because she stayed in the same place with the way that she dealt with that, because she stayed at that same level of terror the whole time, I got bored with her. It wasn't the most interesting, and I would say not even the most believable. Like, I felt like if a real human being were placed in that situation 4 years later, they'd be a little different than they were at the beginning. 4 years later, they would handle their fear in a little bit of a different way, or they'd handle the situation in a different way. And I didn't see that out of her.
So last thing, what can we learn from Mallory? I'm guessing that one of the things is don't whine about being scared the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay to be afraid, but don't be ruled by that terror. And I think that embracing a sense of growth, even in the midst of a long challenge, is really important. I think that the degree to which I feel uncomfortable with saying that, because I'm saying it from a place of safety, like there's a distance that I have from Mallory's situation that is hard for me to necessarily speak into and prescribe what she should have done. But something that I am drawing from this for my own life is that embracing the space for change and for growth is really important, and that not allowing yourself to be overcome by one negative experience or emotion forever, not staying in that place of being overcome by it, is really important.
Yeah. Well, it's cool because it's clear that she doesn't quite pass the test.
Right.
But there are a lot of cool things that we can learn from her character and from this story at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
And she doesn't quite fail it as miserably as she could either. She does make decisions. She does take action in her world. She does have a goal. All those things are critical things. And she could be missing any one of those. She could just float through the story and let other people make her decisions for her. So she's not a doormat, but I would like to still see more from her.
Very cool. Let's get into the talk that I gave at ATL Ideas. Hey everyone, my name is Joe Bunting. So what is your core message? What is the story that if you look back at your life, you can see that you've been telling this story since you were a kid? My core message is awe. It's always been awe. Since I was 14 years old, I've been chasing awe. But what is awe, really? Awe is a kind of word that we throw around sometimes, an awesome word, you might say. But what is it really? When I think of awe, I think about this page from a book by Cormac McCarthy called Blood Meridian. Here it is. You don't have to read the whole thing or any of it really, but I think it captures this feeling of awe as well as anything I can say. That huge paragraph there, it's a single sentence, an amazingly beautiful sentence that comes when this band of Comanche warriors are bearing down on a troop of army irregulars. The irregulars are outnumbered. They're about to be slaughtered. And the sergeant says this, "Oh my God." That sense of dread mixed with this beautiful writing, that is awe. Awe, if you look it up, is synonymous with both wonder and dread. And the way I define it is that it's this emotional and spiritual realization that life is both full of wonder and full of dread, and yet, despite it all, somehow overwhelmingly good. And I remember this one moment. I was in Arizona as a teenager. My parents and I were visiting my older sister, and I was having a kind of bad day that was really a bad year. And I was driving in my car alone, and I had the window rolled down, and I put this song on the radio, and it was just right. And the light against the hills looked just right, and the way that the wind felt against my arm was just right. And all of the bad things that had happened to me, they were finally okay because they had brought me to that perfect moment. I actually decided to become a writer because of this feeling. It started because I thought that if I could read and write books as my job, I could just kind of sit there in that feeling, that awe, all day long. I was a teenager, though. I honestly had no idea what it actually meant to be a writer. And it took a long time to figure out how to actually make steps toward this goal. But when I finally had my first breakthrough, it wasn't with writing books. It was actually with songs. I had my first breakthrough as a songwriter. I was about 20 years old. And I started writing songs and performing them at open mics and coffee shops. And the writing part was really fun for me, but performing them was terrible. It was the worst. I would go to these open mics and there were like 4 people in the room and I would be so nervous and I would play my songs and no one would care. And then I would get down and second guess everything I had done until I was a nervous wreck. Have you ever done that before? But there was this one night that it worked because in the middle of the show, I felt it. It was like a presence. Like something outside of the room had come in. It was awe. And all of a sudden, I was crying in the middle of my show. It's really hard to sing when your voice is shaking because you're almost like sobbing into the microphone. But I wasn't the only one. Other people were crying too. A few people were weeping even. I looked around the room through kind of blurry eyes to see grown men with tears running down their faces. It was amazing. This, I thought, was something I could give my life to. Maybe you've had a similar experience in your life, a time when something touched you to the core beyond words and you thought, this is it. I want to do this. I want to experience more of this. I want to share this with the world. And I didn't know it at the time, but I was discovering my core message. What is your core message? Your core message is a primal thing. A feeling, idea, or a message that if you look back at your life, you've been trying to share this thing since you were a kid. When I've asked people this question, what is their core message? They've told me things like wonder, hope, acceptance, love, awareness. My friend Marion Richmond, her core message is connection. She suffered horrible seizures as a child that made her feel completely disconnected from her friends, from her family, that made her live every day in fear that she would be found out. But when she was finally open and vulnerable with people, instead of rejecting her, people celebrated her. She finally felt connected for the first time in her life. And that led her to writing her first children's books. And her books have gone on to sell over 6 million copies, all from that core message of connection. My friend Terrence Lester's core message is empathy. You might have seen Terrence already at this event. Terrence was homeless as a young man, and he has this amazing ability to treat everyone he meets with dignity, no matter how clean or dirty they are, no matter how rich or poor they are. And in his work, he invites us, most of us who probably haven't experienced homelessness, to enter into that experience. And it's incredibly effective, right? Terrence has helped over 300 people get off the streets because he's told this message so well. And by the way, your core message doesn't have to be touchy-feely. I had the chance to interview a 4-star admiral, Admiral Bill McCraven, recently. Bill used to be a SEAL, then an admiral, then one of the top commanders in the military. But when he gave a commencement address about making your bed that went viral and reached over 9 million people, he tapped into a message he didn't even know he had. He told me the work he's doing now, inspiring people to live a life of good order and discipline, is the most meaningful work he's ever done. What is your core message? Again, this is primal, sometimes beyond words, more of a feeling. What is your core message? For me, my core message was awe, even though I didn't really know it, even though I couldn't really put that into words. And I knew I wanted to be a writer so I could experience more awe and share that feeling with the world. But I didn't know how to do that, so I began learning my craft. And this was smart, because having a core message isn't enough. You also have to learn how to share your message, and that comes by learning the craft. What is the craft? Craft is every skill you need to be successful at your calling. For me, it's writing, of course, but also marketing and copywriting and social media, web design, networking, sales, IT, so many other random skills that I use every day to make a living as a writer. Craft is hard. It's not sexy. It's not magical. It's definitely not awe-inspiring, but it's also essential. For me, it's taken almost 20 years to learn the craft. And there are three ways to learn the craft. Classes are the most popular way to learn a new craft and also the least effective. You should absolutely take classes. You should take marketing classes and copywriting classes. You should take sales classes. You should learn to write code. I don't care who you are. This is the craft and it's essential. But classes can only get you so far. You also have to have mentors. When Ernest Hemingway was living in Paris in the 1920s, he had these two authors he looked up to, Gertrude Stein and Ezra Pound. And he said they were the kinds of people that could help a young writer up the rungs of a career. If you think you can make it on your own, you can't. I needed a mentor, just like everyone else does. Whether you've been doing this 1 year or 30 years, you need someone speaking into your craft and giving you feedback so that you can grow. This episode is brought to you by The Write Practice Pro. The Write Practice Pro is an amazing community of creative writers where you can post your writing, get feedback on it, and figure out how to turn your writing into beautiful, award-winning books, short stories, or novels. I personally post my own writing to this community to get feedback. And if you have any interest in becoming a published, award-winning writer, you should too. The Write Practice Pro is for anyone writing a book, novel, short story, or poem, or anyone who just wants to improve their creative writing. If you want to become a better writer, getting good feedback is something you must invest in. And the Write Practice Pro is the best place to get it. You can sign up for the Write Practice Pro at thewritepractice.com/join. And the last way to learn the craft is to steal. What does it mean to steal? T.S. Eliot said, mediocre poets imitate, great poets steal. So for me, stealing looks like this. Every time I write something in a new form, whether it's a newspaper article or a nonfiction book, I go and I find three really amazing examples of that form and I study them. I look especially for structure, and then I steal that structure. I don't steal the content. We're not talking about plagiarism. I steal the structure so I can find out how to communicate the message that I'm trying to share effectively. And that's what I did. I studied great writing and great marketing. I learned how it worked. And one of the things I learned was how to share an idea in 5 easy steps. So I'm going to get a little bit nerdy here, and I'm going to talk about exactly how you can share your idea in 5 steps. And to share your idea, you need to start with the problem. Everyone wants to start with the solution, but you shouldn't do that. You should start with the problem that people are experiencing. People won't listen to you unless you first identify the problem that they're experiencing in their lives. What problem are the people you're trying to reach experiencing? Start there. And then you need to make the problem personal. How do you make it personal? By telling a story about a time when you or someone you know experienced the same problem. And next is the solution story. Next, you share a story about how you discovered the solution. This is just to build tension so that people are ready for their problem to get solved. And the 4th step is to share your solution. Only after doing all those other things should you share the solution to people's problems. Skipping straight to the solution is kind of like cutting in line. It can make you feel good, but it can really make everyone else unhappy with you. Don't do it. Start with a problem, not the solution. And the last step is the call to action. Now that you've shared your idea, you need to ask people to do something with it, to subscribe, to join your community, to buy your book, to do 10 jumping jacks, whatever it is. So I learned hundreds of different formulas, thousands of steps to accomplish everything from turning my taxes incorrectly to launching a 6-figure product. And at some level, all of my focus on the craft worked. People started paying attention. My audience grew by small amounts at first and then by huge jumps. This year, my writing is going to reach over 5 million people. My book, 14 Prompts, has been read by over 100,000 people. I've accomplished so many of my dreams. But then it began to hit me. I had spent so much time focusing on the craft that I had forgotten what the craft was for. It wasn't supposed to be about getting the biggest audience possible. It was to help people experience awe. And that feeling that I had worked so hard to chase, that awe, I realized I was growing more and more distant from it. And I think every writer, every artist, every nonprofit, every business experiences this tension, the tension between their craft and their core message, the tension between the marketplace and their true purpose. And most people, they try to relieve that tension one way or another. They focus all their attention on doing things that sell, and then they get frustrated when they feel like a sellout or when they feel like their work is hollow. Or else they ignore the marketplace. They focus just on their art, on their core message, and then they're left kind of disappointed when they can't make a living on their passion. For me, I had focused so much on trying to impress people with the craft, to make people think I was a good writer who knew what I was talking about, so they would listen to me, that I forgot what the craft was for. It wasn't supposed to be about impressing people. It was supposed to be about passing on this feeling, this awe that I had dedicated my life to. There was this moment not too long ago. I was at a conference in Portland in a room kind of like this one. And there was a person on the stage sharing their core message, this feeling that they had given their life to. And somehow they had combined the craft so perfectly with their message that it was indistinguishable. It was perfect. And I started weeping. Half the audience did. There in that theater, something had come into the room and I couldn't help but get swept up in it. And it woke something up inside of me, and not just in me, but in so many of us in that audience. And that is what you have the ability to do if you take it. You can find your core message, that thing, that mysterious thing that makes you weep or gets you excited or gives you energy and purpose and meaning, and harness it to your craft, the skills, the marketing, the network that you've built, and use it to wake people up, to give people hope, to free people where they've been locked up, and to make the world a better, more human, more connected place, more full of awe. Will you do it? Will you do what it takes? So I'm starting a new journey, a journey where I'm refusing to let my craft dictate to my core message, where I let my awe inspire my use of the craft. But I'd love to invite you to follow along my journey. Later this year, I'm going to publish some writing that I've been hiding away for years because I've been so terrified it might not be good enough. I also started a new podcast called Character Test, where we talk about the intersection between our character and the characters in the books we read and the films we watch. If you'd like to follow along as I struggle to find my way through this tension, you can find me here on Instagram. I'm at JH Bunting. You can follow the podcast at charactertestshow.com. So thank you so much. It's an honor to be on this stage and to be part of this community. Thanks for being an amazing group. So I want to close with something of a creative blessing. So I'll just say this. May you discover your core message. May you find your place in the tension between the craft and that message. Most of all, though, may you experience awe today. Thank you. All right, let's get into our character study segment of the show. This is where we ask what we can learn from the talk and apply it to our own lives as we try to live a better story. All right, Alice, what was your takeaway?
My takeaway was that there's something that drives us to create. There's some motivating factor, something underneath our creativity that fuels that creativity and makes us want to create. And we can be unconscious of it, or we can choose to dig into that and investigate it and become conscious of it. And the sense that I get from this talk is that when we create something that is in line with that motivating core, then that is even more rich and rewarding. And so if we can identify the core, then we can more intentionally create in alignment with it and find more fulfillment in the things that we create and impact more people because we've got more weight behind them.
Do you have a sense of what your core message is?
I mean, I have a sense that my question after this talk is, how do you find your core message? I have to think on that. I know that one thing that drives me personally is I like making things better, bringing things back into order out of chaos, which is why I really enjoy being an editor, because it's a space where I get to step into something that exists but is unfinished. There's a better possibility for it, and I love finding the ways to make things better and bringing organization and peace and order into chaotic spaces. So that, I think, could be some of it, but I don't know that that's necessarily the core. It's just where my starting point to investigate it.
Cool.
My other takeaway from this is that I have made my bed almost every single day since I was 13 years old, and I learned from this talk that that means I've basically mastered life.
So true. It's impressive.
I'm giving myself a pat on the back right now. How about you? What was your takeaway?
Yeah, so my takeaway was really just the tension. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot and talking about it occasionally on the podcast, but I think that this tension between your craft and your core message is something all creatives need to really dig into, because you have to focus on the craft. The craft is something you can't really escape, but the craft can also be really chaotic. It can sometimes lead you astray. It can distract you. You can sometimes go in circles if you just focus on the craft and actually not accomplish anything. On the other hand, if you just focus on the craft, that doesn't work either. You need your core message. It's the source of so much of any creative's energy and power. But if you just focus on that, you'll also do bad work that doesn't really reach anyone. So you need both, but both of them are actually opposed. They're actually opposites. They want different things. And so there's always this tension, and there always will be this tension. And if you want to be successful, you really have to find your way through that tension. And I don't necessarily have all the great answers for that, just except knowing that that tension exists and it should exist and you can't escape it. I don't know if I'm particularly good at finding my way through that tension, but I want to be better at that.
Is there anything that you're doing right now to help you navigate that tension?
Yeah, I mean, I am part of these groups of friends and also communities with other writers. And sometimes just being around those kinds of people can help you rediscover or remind you about your core message. I went to a couple of conferences this summer that were really helpful for that, just kind of getting away from the craft a little bit and really focusing on, why am I doing this? Like, what is this really about for me? Why is this important to me? And that's so inspiring. And it's so important to have those kind of retreat times where you're getting back into the core motivation of what you're doing. And that brings so much energy and also new ideas for the craft too. But if you just focus on the craft, I think you miss some of that. And the craft can just become meaningless. I mean, all focus on like how to do something rather than on why you're doing something.
For sure. Yeah.
So that's today's character test challenge. It's to think about your core message. So I'd like you to take 10 or so minutes and think back through your life. What idea, emotion, or theme have you been trying to express since you were a kid? Then let us know what it is over in the comment section over at charactertestshow.com/episode11. And we'll post the link to that in the show notes. We'd love to hear from you. So that's it. That's our show. Thanks to Pictures of the Floating World for our theme music. Don't forget to go to charactertestshow.com/episode11 for your free prize. And we have a new review from David. Alice, what did it say?
The two hosts, Joe and Alice, complement each other and keep things fresh by shifting from stories on the page to off. I love quick shifts, so this hits all the right gears.
You just picked that one because it mentions you, right?
I may have done that, yes. So if you want your review to get read on the podcast, now you know the secret. Not really a secret, because I think I mentioned that maybe on episode one.
Yes, please go to your podcast player, find whatever button you need to leave a review, then write a review. It can be as short as one sentence and click submit. It'll take you 30 seconds to leave a review, but it'll be a huge help. Thanks so much and have a great rest of your day.